The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What is good, everybody? Welcome to episode number 27 of the Off Day Debrief, part of the SB Nation NFL show. I am Rob Stats Guerrera from Niners Nation, and with me, as always, Brandon Lee Gowton of Bleeding Green Nation. What is up, Brandon?
Stats, I'm here with you. As always, it's a good time. I'm not going to go to the full length that RJ Ochoa goes, where he like basically writes you a love letter at the top of the look ahead there. It's no disrespect to you, but you know, I'm just much more of a stoic person. So that's how I roll.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not feeling the love from you today. I'm not going to lie. What's going on?
I think we should be enemies. I think it'd be more fun if we were enemies. Maybe that's just a podcast that RJ and I have to do one day. I think you and I are too smart. Maybe to, you know, we're on the same, we're intellectuals, you know, we're just on the same page all the time.
RJ Ochoa has been a very busy man because Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys have finally set down their weapons, sat down, broken bread, and they have agreed on a new contract, BLG. And you and I were slacking yesterday, reacting to the news about what it was. And I got to tell you, I have been completely flipped around on my opinion on the Dak Prescott deal. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into how this possibly affects another quarterback on the market, Russell Wilson, plus your Eagles. I don't know what's going on with your Eagles. Jeffrey Lurie's getting involved. That situation doesn't seem like it's going to end well, but I want to get your take on that. But before we get into all of that, and oh, by the way, we have Ross Tucker from Westwood One, CBS Sports, and pretty much everywhere football is discussed, going to join us as well. We want to remind you, please rate, review, and subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show. They really help us. We really appreciate them. They help us make the show better, and we want to be better for you. So please, if you have not done so already, do so. And BLG, I can't help but notice you have not given us a rating or a review. What's up with that?
That's not true. I did. It's just, you know, a secret account, Stats. Look, I can't. Now you made me give it up, and now everyone knows. But, you know, I'm not going to put it under my own name like Michael Kiss. What am I, a psycho?
All right. See, well, we would like some real ratings and reviews. So please give us those. We do appreciate it, as I said. Okay, so let's get into this Dak stuff. It is crazy. It is, for all intents and purposes, a four-year, $160 million deal. $126 million is guaranteed. He gets $75 million, BLG, in this season. That is the most ever. It is a $66 million signing bonus. That is the most ever. Dak is cashing in. Your thoughts?
Well, Stats, first of all, I'm glad you said all intents and purposes instead of the misnomer or whatever you would call it, all intensive purposes.
I hate that.
It's a bad one. It's a tough look when you see it written out, especially, you know, the pronunciation thing can maybe get a little blurred, but when you see it, second thing, Pete Sweeney saying that crunchy peanut butter is better than smooth peanut butter is just insane. And it's, to me, it's as insane as Dak Prescott folding here, Stats. We had all the leverage in this situation. There was no need for Dak to fold. Now, look, I'm not going to say that an annual value of $42 million, which is just under Patrick Mahomes at $45 million, and it's ahead of Deshaun Watson at $39 million. And then $75 million straight up in his first year is anything to sneeze at. Obviously, there is reason for Dak to, you know, give in and get this money. I get it. He's coming off injury. I get it. But what I don't get, Stats, is why now? For either side, why this moment? If the Cowboys wanted to get this done earlier, they could have gotten it done earlier. Like, didn't have to take this long. And if Dak was going to take a deal, like, why didn't he do it earlier as well? Like, why wait till right now when he could have waited just a little bit more, one more season? And I just think he really could have broke the bank next offseason, because teams would have more cap space. The cap is going up next year, you know, post-COVID world, hopefully, you know, more so. And then, two, just the Cowboys being unable, probably, to tag him a third time next offseason. So I just don't get why now.
I think the reason is revealed in something that Dak Prescott's dad said on Sports Talk Radio in Texas. He said, quote, "I am a lifelong Cowboy fan, and I raised the kid a Cowboy fan. At 5 years old, he told me he will be quarterback for the Cowboys. I don't think God gives you those types of gifts to make them incomplete." I agree with you. I think he would have gotten more on the open market, but I think he wanted to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and I think he knew that if he waited, he was going to have to play somewhere else, even if he got more money. So I think that is the reason, because I agree with you. On the open market, he would have gotten more.
I will say the 4 years is a big win for him, because, you know, then he gets to test the market sooner in the future. So from that standpoint, that kind of makes me see some more sense of it. But ultimately, and I really hate to say this here, Stats, but I think Dak taking this deal at the time he did is a bit of concession to the team. I know that seems kind of crazy when you look at the money of it all, but like, sure? I think he did this to some extent, more so than I thought he would, as a favor to the team, as opposed to going and waiting longer. Because if he really just wanted to maximize his total value no matter what, basically the Kirk Cousins approach, and not really care about the team at all, then he could have gone that route, and he didn't.
But here's the crazy thing. So I just looked it up. When Cousins originally signed with Minnesota, he signed a 3-year deal worth $84 million fully guaranteed. Dak's getting $75 million this year. Like, it is an incredible deal. And let me just say this. There is nobody I trust more when it comes to breaking down contracts and getting past all the fluff and the spin that comes out, because there's a lot of different things. Agents put out a lot of different things. Teams put out things. There's no one I trust more than Mike Florio. And he has his usual contract breakdown post up on PFT right now. Here's how the post starts. Quote, "Dak Prescott's contract easily can be called the best contract ever signed by any player in league history." To hear Mike Florio say that, that turned me around on it. And his point was basically like what you said. He's going to hit the open market again at 31. Patrick Mahomes, who has a bigger deal, is still going to be under contract for 7 more years after that, BLG.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the Mahomes thing, you know, is going to get adjusted as time goes on, and he's probably inevitably winning more Super Bowls, at least in the mind of Ian Pete Sweeney here, who I mentioned earlier. Stats, I feel like we kind of need to talk about the player. No, I get what Florio is saying there, and I don't think it's a bad deal. I just think it could have been an even better deal. And look, you can accuse me of being a bitter Eagles fan, upset that Dak is staying in the NFC East and giving, you know, the Cowboys the best chance to win the division, at least on paper. So why don't we talk about Dak the player a little bit here? Like, is he worth this money? Because I was on, you know, Blogging the Boys podcast, their little locker room session that RJ was doing last week. And I asked them this question straight up. I said, "Do you think Dak Prescott is ultimately a quarterback you win because of, as opposed to win with?" And I asked them that question because I felt like the hang up with this deal for the Cowboys for a long time is that they didn't fully believe in them. There was some kind of reluctance to really give in to his demands. And they were kind of afraid that when they paid Dak, they're going to have less money to build the support system around him that they were able to when he was dirt cheap early in his career, and, you know, spend all this money and all these resources on skill players and whatnot. And the answer, Stats, that RJ gave to me, and I quote, "Well, despite the fact that I have read many an article at BleedingGreenNation.com, I believe Dak Prescott is a quarterback you win with," end quote. So he didn't say win because of, and you don't need to see any further context from that interview. You can just trust my word for it.
Well, yeah, if there's one thing we've learned is context is overrated, right? We don't need context, friend. Just read a headline and you'll get everything you need to know. I agree that, I mean, it's going to put stress on the team for sure. Like, the Cowboys have to nail the next 2 to 3 drafts to have a real shot to win. They have to absolutely crush them. Like, and I know fans, you know, we watch on Thursday for the first round and maybe you watch on Friday for the second round and then they kind of turn it off. If you're a Cowboy fan, no, no, no. Your Super Bowl will be won on the other days of the draft because they have to hit home runs. They're going to need productive players for super cheap because they're paying Dak this money and Zeke that money and Amari Cooper that money and Tank Lawrence that money. Like, that's the only path to victory for them. And really, no one's really been able to do it after they give the quarterback the big deal. So it'll be interesting to see if the Cowboys can. I think Dak is really good. I don't know if he's worth this much money, but the only reason he got this much money was because of sort of how it played out with the negotiations. But I agree with you. If we're just looking at production to dollars comparison, I don't think he's worth that much money.
Well, there's a lot to prove here still. This is a guy with one playoff win, ultimately. And that playoff win came against Pete Carroll's Seahawks, where they like refused to pass the ball specifically in that game when like every play they would throw the ball with Russ, like they would get like a positive play, a first down. And then for some reason, they just insisted still on running the ball, which, you know, basically has been a big problem in Seattle, not to go on that tangent. But anyway, that's Dak's one singular playoff win, that game. So not to say he can't win more in the future, but the pressure is on now in Dallas. Like, you know, Mike McCarthy had his mulligan. Dak was hurt last year. And I think there were concerns about how that, you know, how things went for that team beyond Dak getting hurt. So, the excuses are running out. Like, the quarterback is under contract. You're building this thing up. You have the head coach in place now who, yes, he's apparently, you know, better than Jason Garrett. So, you know, the excuses are running out. And if we don't see production from McCarthy and Dak here soon, that team should be getting a lot more criticism and scrutiny if the results aren't there.
I agree. I think the pressure is on. And I will say this for Dak. Like, don't forget, at the time he went out last year, he was absolutely crushing it. I think he was leading the league in pass yards in week 5 when he got hurt. So he was living up to the production that we're going to expect from him. Whether he can keep that going now is we're going to have to see. I agree with you. But, you know, he was kind of rolling there. But Cowboy fans are pretty demanding. They were pretty demanding when he was making $450,000. Now it's going to be slightly different when he's averaging, what did you say, $42 million a year in the next 3 years. Would you have done it if you were the Cowboys? Or at this point, would you have said, it's just too much, let's walk away?
They had to do it. They were in a position where they had to do it. And I think that's why Dak could have waited even more, because he knew the team had to do it. I mean, and for as much as, you know, I talked about them potentially getting Russell Wilson, and that was fun to think about, you know, that was never the most likely thing. I thought, the way I put it to RJ was like, if Dak does not get an extension before the July 15th, you know, assuming they were going to tag him, which they didn't end up doing. And now Dak can never be tagged again because of, you know, how this deal worked out. So another good thing for him. He also gets the no trade clause. Those are two things we should also mention in that deal, you know, which makes it even better for him because he gets power in addition to a lot of money. So those are things I guess I didn't even weigh earlier. Again, it's not a bad deal for him. I'm not trying to say it's a bad deal. But yeah, what was your question, Stats? I totally got lost in what I was saying.
Do you need me for any of this, or are you just going
to
go?
I could just go on by myself. I'll just ramble till the cows come home.
My question was, if you were the Cowboys at this point, would you have done this deal knowing how much money it is, or would you have said it's just too much, we can't do it?
I think they what's the alternative? What, don't you agree? What would you have done?
I mean, I never would have let it get to this point to begin with, but if I'm at this point, see, I, like, fans will complain, but let's say that they let Dak go. They were like, nope, forget it. And they drafted a guy who was really, really good. Like, they drafted a guy like Joe Burrow or even whatever, another Dak Prescott in the 4th round. Fans wouldn't really care, right? They'd probably be praising the Cowboys for letting him go. So they judge the move based on what you would do after that.
To your point there, I think there is an NFL world, and it's not like necessarily realistic because there's sentimentality and there's culture and a lot of different and a human element of it all. But I think, you know, if we're just doing Madden here, if we're running like a Madden franchise and you're taking the emotions out of it and everything, I think there's a case to be made, you know, for an NFL system where you don't pay the quarterback and you kind of cycle through them, unless they're Patrick Mahomes and it's just literally like you know, or just like the best, the very, very best player in the sport, or like, you know, Russell Wilson, maybe like right next to that. But like anything less than a like bona fide top five quarterback, maybe there's an argument that you should really just cycle through and not pay them the big money, because, you know, that's where the Carson Wentz contract and the Jared Goff contract ultimately went wrong for the Eagles and the Rams. Like, they were paying elite money, top of the market money, to guys who weren't even coming close to that. And obviously Wentz fell off in a way that no one could have expected, but even really at Wentz's average, not going to say his very best, you know, at his very best, I think he's worth that. But when you look at kind of the more aggregate and what you're going to get out of him on a year to year basis, as opposed to the, you know, the very best, like, probably wasn't worth, you know, elite top of the market money. So that's the conundrum that you could say. And I think we get into the mindset that I just said. It's like, well, what else were they going to do? Well, maybe you could draft someone. Maybe if you're really good and you're really, you know, smart and healthy organization, you have the tools in place to keep cycling through quarterbacks. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think that's realistic right now. I think it's kind of like, you know, like fourth down decisions, you know, it's kind of like taking the NFL time to like get bolder and aggressive with that. But I think that could be the way the league should be going potentially in the future.
I 100% agree with you. I think that you could make an argument based on, because of the rookie wage scale, you can make an argument that the only positions you ever pay a second contract to are elite pass rushers and elite quarterbacks, and that is it. I think you're starting to see it with running backs, honestly. Like, there's no reason to sign a running back to a second contract. If I ran a team, I would draft a running back. Maybe if you want to get, you know, if you want to get cute, you could draft him in the first round so you get the fifth-year option. Franchise him for 2 years and then let them go. I would never, ever, ever pay another running back. And I think I agree with you. You could make the argument that you shouldn't really pay anybody but the elite players, because the rookie wage scale is so, it's so restrictive on what these guys earn. And I think you would be burned less often by letting a good player go than you would be by giving out these huge contracts to guys like Goff or Zeke or people like that.
I guess it'll be interesting, though. Think going against that is, if the market's really going to go up, like the cap space and everything, if you know, new TV deals and whatnot have everything explode, maybe there's just more room for error and you can pay those guys because everyone's going to have so much cap space and you're not going to really have to worry about that. And I think that could be a counter to my own argument of the Dak thing. It's like, well, the Cowboys aren't going to have enough space to build around them. Well, again, if everything's going up, that kind of goes out the window, and then that's not even a concern.
So, again, you don't really need me for any of this.
Yeah, there you go.
One more point I want to make before we move off the Dak stuff, and this is sort of a bigger picture thing. For anybody, any quarterback in the league now, Lamar Jackson, I'm talking to you, any quarterback that is on a rookie deal, this is the playbook. This is your blueprint. There is no reason for you to sign with a team until you absolutely have to. Play through your contract. Play through the tag years. What do we always say? Oh, well, there's injury risk. Well, guess what? Dak did that, and he had the injury, and he just signed, again, what Mike Florio called the greatest contract in NFL history. So really, you don't have anything to worry about. Every quarterback should do this if they want to maximize their dollars. Don't listen to the team or the fans. Listen to your agent, because I guarantee you that the other agents around the league are looking at this, and they are saying, aha, the light bulb is on. This is the way to do it.
Lamar, we know you listen. Please leave a rating and review. We'd appreciate it. listen to stats.
That's going to be a drop forever, by the way. So thank you very much for that. All right, let's take a break. And there's so much more to do in this show. There's the Russell Wilson aspect to this. There's that quarterback situation in Philadelphia, which I think is a mess, which I can't wait to hear you talk about. Plus, we've still got our interview with Ross Tucker. There's a ton of stuff left. Stay with us. We'll be back with more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the SB Nation NFL show. All right, BLG, we have talked a lot about Dak, but there's other quarterback stuff. First of all, the Cowboys were one of the teams that Russell Wilson had listed on his four-team wish list. They are obviously off of that list now. You can cross that off. The Raiders traded Trent Brown to the Patriots, so their offensive line is looking in shambles. I wonder if you can cross the Raiders off Russ's wish list. That list now is it's dwindling.
So it leaves the Saints, who don't have the cap space, really, to acquire Russell Wilson. Now, they've been making some moves. You know, obviously, they're going to have to get under the cap. Maybe they could kind of do something, and that would certainly be an attractive spot for him. I can't see why the Seahawks want to trade him in conference and kind of create or really help sustain one of the top powers in that conference that they will be competing in. And that leaves the Bears, who what are the Bears offering for Russell Wilson that is even worth it to you if you're Seattle?
I mean, I would think you've got to go 3 first round picks and Khalil Mack, right?
I mean, at a minimum, yeah. But I mean, like, are you super excited about that? Because realistically, those first round picks are probably going to be late. I mean, Russell Wilson has never had what is it again? His worst season is like 9-7, and I think he has double digit wins in every other season of his career. Like, so those aren't going to be even very good first round picks, probably. So I don't know. And then, you know, Khalil Mack, obviously a very good player, but it's not like you're going to like build your entire, like you still need a quarterback now. What are you going to do there? And Khalil Mack turned 30 in February. So like you're getting a player over 30, making a lot of money. I don't know. Like that's not even an amazing package to me, even though on paper it sounds like it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I guess they could throw in a couple more defensive players. I agree. Like I look on their offense, it's like there's nobody that I would really want, especially Allen Robinson's a free agent, so you can't even really include him. Maybe, like I said, maybe you throw in some more defensive players and you sort of entice Pete Carroll. Apparently, he hates offense. Maybe you say, you know, you get Khalil Mack and we throw in a couple other players, maybe Roquan Smith. I don't know. Put 2 linebackers in the deal. What the hell?
I don't know why Russ doesn't want to go to Miami. And maybe he does, but I mean, just from the list that we saw reported out there from Adam Schefter, like, why aren't the Dolphins on that list? They need a quarterback. You know, Tua is there, but that's also something the Dolphins could give up to Seattle and would, in theory, you know, be part of a sell to the Seahawks. Like, okay, you know, we're moving on. Russ didn't want to be here, but at least we have, you know, a high pick from last year who we can try to build around. We're going to run the ball a lot. Who cares? It doesn't matter that we got rid of Russell Wilson. We weren't going to throw the ball with him anyway. We got this rookie in here. We'll just run around. We'll run. We'll play defense. And then on Russ's end, it's like, it's Miami. It's like, wouldn't you rather be in Miami than Seattle? No offense to Seattle. I love the Pacific Northwest, but I mean, it's Miami. You're Russ. I feel like Sierra might want to be down there in Miami. And the Dolphins have a team in place that they just need the quarterback. And I feel like based on what it would take to get him, I feel like they still have enough there, even with what they give up for Russ, that like, it's not like Russ is coming into the situation. It's like, okay, well, now I'm here, but the assets are depleted because they just gave up a bunch of this stuff to get me.
Yeah, Miami makes sense. I don't understand that one either. Like, they should want to do it because he's really good. The only thing maybe from Miami's side is they're really trying to get Deshaun. And since Deshaun is younger, that could be their angle. But, I mean, if Deshaun is not in the picture, they should absolutely make the deal for Russell Wilson. I don't know. I don't know why it was those 4. I don't know if he would be willing to expand that. He does have the no trade, so that's a factor, obviously. But, I mean, if I'm in Miami, I'm definitely making the call for sure. And not, to be honest, I would almost – I mean, you can't do this legally, but I'm sure it gets done. Try to get a bug in Russ's ear. Like, sell him on Miami a little bit. Hey, here's some things maybe you didn't think of. Maybe your wife didn't think of. You know, this is why it would be good for you. I'm sure that stuff happens, and it would be worth it if you're Miami.
As the places dwindle on Russ's list, do you feel like, because you've been pretty confident, and I feel like I've been kind of right there with you in terms of Russ getting traded, do you feel any less confident now?
No. I think he has suited up for the final time for the Seahawks. I think that he's trying to go about it in a nicer way than Deshaun Watson, but I think he's just as bad. I think he is just done with them, and he's trying to preserve his image, but I don't think it's going to work. I think people will still be mad at him, but I think he has suited up for the final time. I saw something from PFT that cemented it in my head. Here it was. Mentioned in a recent Seahawks letter to season ticket holders, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Shane Waldron, Andy Dickerson, not mentioned in recent Seahawks letter to season ticket holders, Russell Maximus Wilson. And I have no idea if that's his middle name, but that's what I thought he deserved. So that's what I went with.
I could see that being his middle name. Let me look this up real quick. I'm going to have to look up because you had me sold there. I'm like, I was going to ask, like, is that really his middle name? It's it's actually Carrington. It is not Maximus.
Carrington. Russell Carrington Wilson.
He has a last name for a middle name.
All right. Well, that seems to fit with Russ, but yeah, I think he's done. I think that he has made it known to them that he's done. It's amazing to me that that's where we are, but you know, and maybe he's so frustrated that he is willing to expand that list. I don't know. But I think that the fact that Mike Silver was out there talking about it, I feel like the Seahawks, you know, when Silver said, well, they have to at least listen, they wouldn't be doing their job. That's the Seahawks greasing the skids to get him out of town. I'm convinced of it.
So that's what's the other quarterback trade that you wanted to talk about?
So the other quarterback trade, and this is just a thing that I hadn't even thought of, but it was from John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, who is like the godfather of Houston Texans beat writers. Same guy that initially said that there's no chance that Deshaun should be traded, had an article recently that said that they not only should trade him, they should trade him to Arizona for Kyler Murray, which as a Niner fan, like, gee, could we just throw any more stuff into the NFC West for my boys to compete with? But it's not a crazy idea, BLG. Like, I think that you might have to throw in some other stuff to make it work because Kyler's not as good as Deshaun, but there's a foundation there for sure.
Envisioning a world where Matthew Stafford comes to the Rams, Russell stays in Seattle, and then the Cardinals get Deshaun Watson along the 49ers. Yeah, stick with Jimmy G.
Yeah, that'd be great for us. Like that's my nightmare.
It is interesting, the proposal, and that's obviously, like you said, that's not nothing. Like, McClain isn't necessarily reporting that that's going to happen, but it's also like not just total, like he just woke up one day and just started throwing things at a dartboard and he's totally just like spitballing that out of nowhere. It feels like he had heard something about that maybe at some point. I like it for the Cardinals, obviously, because I think Kyler is talented and I still have hope for his potential, but he's just not far enough along as a passer to where I think the Cardinals they could be ready to make a run like this year if they got Deshaun Watson, if they got the right quarterback in there. And all of a sudden, you know, Arizona turning into Houston here, you're getting J.J. Watt, getting
Hopkins.
I don't know why I blanked on DeAndre Hopkins, but I did. And then if you're Houston, I think Kyler makes sense for that environment because you're getting a quarterback with potential back and a guy who I think is going to take some more time to develop as a passer. And guess what? Newsflash, Houston isn't competing for a Super Bowl anytime very soon here. So why not get a guy you can ideally try to hope build over the long term and a guy who hopefully would want to be there. Florio, I think, mentioned or it was mentioned that, you know, Kyler could, in theory, try to threaten to leave for baseball and not go to Houston. But I like that trade. I would do it if I'm both sides.
Yeah, I feel like if you did Kyler and like a first this year and you throw in like a third in 2022, like that probably gets it done. Houston needs draft picks and they'd be able to sell it to their fans. Like, look, we got a guy that was the first overall pick in the draft. Heisman Trophy winner. The guy showed incredible flashes at times on the field. Plus, we got extra draft picks. Yeah, we screwed it up with Deshaun, but he didn't want to be here. So this is, you know, look what we got in exchange. Like, that's not a bad haul if you're Houston.
Yeah, and then just even the local angle too, right? I mean, I don't know.
That's my true, yeah.
Southern geography super great. I'm Googling here the distance from Norman, Oklahoma, where, you know, the Sooners play, obviously, to Houston, and it is 6 hours and 17 minutes. So there's just a little local flair there too. I guess I don't know if that really helps, but I'll just throw it in there. Why not?
Now we're just throwing things up there. No, I think it would be fascinating, and I like it too because I'm a big fan of, don't just consider your options as the people that get reported in the media. Oh, the Dolphins, the Jets. Like, no, you're a GM. There's 31 other teams here. Call everybody. Those are your real options. So if they would do it, I like that idea, as opposed to just, well, it was either Miami or the Jets. Like, no, that is not good. And I think you get a better deal if you shop around like that. And even if, like, let's say that they couldn't consummate the deal, maybe having that negotiation helps them with the Jets or the Dolphins if that's ultimately where Deshaun wound up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, it's what we've been saying about Russ. It's a point of no return for Deshaun. And then when you have, you know, the preeminent Texans beat writer saying it, and not only saying it, like they should, and then actually proposing a specific trade that it could happen. I mean, it only feels like it's a matter of time here.
And, you know, a lot of these insiders, these beat writers, these people with more information than you and me, they don't pull this stuff out of thin air. And I'm not saying that the Texans told him to write it. Of course not. John's got more integrity than that. But what I am saying is there's a reason that he came up with this. So maybe he's hearing certain whispers about, hey, the Texans are looking around, or maybe he's heard certain things about how much they liked Kyler Murray in the draft when he came out. I don't think it's an accident that he came up with this deal is my point.
I totally agree with that. I think it goes back to the denialism of anytime a star player is on the market and it's like, oh, they're lying. I think you talked about it on the look ahead stats, I believe, last week, the cycle that people go through. And it's not even just with like the media saying it. It's a lot of fans who say it and say the media is lying. But guess what? A lot of the times they're not. They're hearing things. And maybe they're not always right 100% of the time. But I don't know anyone who just makes stuff up. Just a little peek behind the curtain. I don't know a single person. I've never met some. I can think of one example of one person, but like it's very much the exception.
Yes. Thank you for saying that because it drives me nuts. Like I've considered myself a part of the media for years. I've gotten to know a lot of people in the media and thank you. We don't just make stuff up. Like, sorry, that just doesn't happen. And like you said, there are rare exceptions, but usually those people are found out and dealt with pretty quickly. All right. Let's get to the situation in Philadelphia, BLG, because
we have to.
I thought that they were like sort of on their way back, right? They dug themselves a hole with the Carson Wentz situation. He's shaking your head. He dug himself a hole with the Carson Wentz situation. Like we talked about the analogy of they shot a hole in the lifeboat that they were in. But once the boat was sinking, I thought they made a move to at least try and preserve things. Now we hear that Jeffrey Lurie says, no quarterback competition. We want Jalen Hurts to be set up to succeed. And he's given the marching orders, according to Chris Mortensen of ESPN, to new head coach Nick Sirianni. What the owner wants, the owner gets. This can only turn out badly for the Eagles, right?
So I think the approach is right in terms of like the end point they're reaching. I've said here on the Oddcast and elsewhere on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed that I feel like the Eagles should stick with Jalen Hurts this year. Give him a year to see what he can do. And if you love a quarterback in this year's draft, and Chris Mortensen had mentioned there is some he didn't explicitly say there's internal support, but he intimated that there's some internal support in the Eagles that really would like them to move up to number two and get Zach Wilson. And also that the love for Jalen Hurts inside the Eagles is not like a unanimous thing. So that was said, but it doesn't really matter if Lurie is calling the shots. And that's where the problem becomes, because you don't want an owner stats who is dictating like what the head coach and the GM should be deciding. Like, why do you have a head coach and GM if you're going to be an owner who interferes and make those decisions for them? Like, why have those guys around if you don't trust them? That's my biggest frustration point with it all. It's like, what if the Eagles had a good general manager that Jeffrey Lurie trusted to get things right? And I think Howie Roseman, even though it kind of sounds weird in that, like, look, at the end of the day, Lurie has all the power. He's the owner. No one can like make him do anything. But I feel like if the Eagles had a better and kind of more authoritative and stronger GM, I think you would see him push back a little bit more and be like, no, like I'm doing it my way. And guess what? And if you're not going to let me do that, then fire me. I think Howie Roseman is so concerned about only like keeping his job and only maintaining that and like very Littlefinger-esque that it's like there is no pushback. And to his credit, like in terms of, I've said this before, where I think Howie Roseman deserves a ton of credit is the fact that he's done such a good job of placating the owner that the owner keeps keeping him around, even though he shouldn't be around anymore. So I just think it's a mess when the owner is involved, like like when you look at the worst franchises stats, right? Like the New York Knicks, James Dolan, Washington for a long time, Dan Snyder. Like these are the owners you don't want to be compared to. And a big argument and a big thing against them is they're too involved. And I think Jeffrey Lurie is getting too involved.
Yeah. Show me the meddling owner, the active owner who's been a success. Like it almost never works. And here's the part of it that you should be troubled by if you're an Eagles fan. There's no side of this that's good, right? Because let's say that Lurie is right. Even if he's correct and that Jalen Hurts is really good, if you don't have a head coach and a GM in place that can recognize that, that's a bad situation. Or the other side of it, let's say Lurie is wrong and he's not any good and Hurts is not any good. Well, then you've got a meddling owner not letting your coach and your GM do what they want to do. So there's no part of this that works out for you if you're an Eagles fan.
The way my BGN radio co-host and one-time guest of the Oddcast here, Stats, Jimmy Kempke, put it is you don't want the first baseman calling balls and strikes. Like, it's just not their responsibility. Like, that's not what they're supposed to do. So, again, I like Jalen Hurts. I do. I don't know, and I have doubt, really, that he's going to be a franchise quarterback. But when you look at how he talks, and he was on the Adam Schefter podcast, coincidentally, on Monday, and just the way he talks about getting better and everything, like, he is hungry to improve, and I get it. And I almost can see, again, I can understand the Eagles being enamored with him, and I also, I think, understand it from a point of Lurie saying, like, hey, Howie, you don't just get to, like, pass the buck again, and, like, mm-hmm. bring in a new quarterback, and now like you're committing to him for a long term. It's like, no, we're going to see how this works. This pick that you made, although presumably it could have been Lurie. Like there's a lot of talk that, you know, Lurie really liked Hurts, and maybe more so than the NFL. There's talk that a lot of other teams didn't value Hurts at number 53 and thought he was more of a third round pick, a fourth round pick. So there's that consideration in there. But it is a mess to your stats. Again, it's just so tough. I really want to care about the Eagles again in a way where like the Dak Prescott news would hurt me more than it did, or like, or, you know, RJ could troll me and I could actually feel it. Like right now, if RJ wants to say like bad stuff about the Eagles, I just don't care. Cause like, yeah, I agree.
And you're not, and that's the worst thing. If you're the owner of the Eagles, apathy is worse than hatred. Hatred is passion. You can't hate something you don't care about. That works. You know, a lot of times for local radio stations, when the team is bad, the ratings are higher than when the team is good because people are fired up. They're angry. But if you're just apathetic, you just stay home and don't care. That's trouble if you're an owner. Let me ask you this, because we are in the season of lying, as I call it. Once you get to the start of the new league year and free agency, really to the combine, I should say, you can't trust anything anybody says. And there was a lot of chatter about how the Eagles were really looking into rookie quarterbacks. They really liked a couple of guys. It was, hey, don't put it past the Eagles to draft another quarterback. Now, all of a sudden, we get this very public decree from the owner that make it work with Jalen Hurts. Is it at all possible that this is a smokescreen from the Eagles?
I think you have to consider that angle, because if the Eagles truly did want to draft a quarterback, wouldn't they want everyone to think they did not want to draft a quarterback? Like that's the motivation of it. So I think you can consider that, but I think it's genuine. Like I do think Lurie really wants to, I mean, cause just when you look at it, like logically, I think that's kind of what adds up. I don't think that he so much wants to, you know, I don't think he wants to trade up again. I don't think they're going to take that route after seeing how that kind of just went for them with Carson Wentz. And not to say that it would definitely happen again that way, but just, you know, feeling sensitive to that, I just don't see that being the option. I think Lurie's sentiment is that, hey, we're not quarterback away. Like, we need a lot of pieces here. We can't afford to trade up when we can see what we have in Jalen Hurts. And then if he's not good enough, we can go into next year. Maybe there's a quarterback on the veteran market that we can acquire, like, you know, the Rams did with Matthew Stafford, or, you know, not that Tom Brady's going to make it to the market, you know, but some kind of high profile free agent quarterback, or if they're bad enough to get a high pick in next year's draft. And obviously they have the Colts first round pick potentially, depending on how, you know, Wentz does in Indianapolis next year. So they have options. I don't think they necessarily need to push all their chips in and again, force a pick on a quarterback this year. But I think the smokescreen angle, like, you have to think about it, but I don't think that's what's going on here.
But what if they don't have to trade up? what if they're sitting there and one or two of these quarterbacks falls into their lap?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I just think three are going to be gone. At least three are going to be gone by number six. Lawrence is going number one. I think everything we're hearing about Wilson, I think he's really going to go number two. And then I think Fields is going to go three. I don't know if I've seen some scenarios where the Falcons might trade up to get him or if they just take him at their pick. I think those three guys are going to be off the board. And at that point, And honestly, maybe even Trey Lance goes too, or Mac Jones. Maybe one of
that
those guys.
High though? I mean, what are the Eagles at six?
They're at six. I'm not going to count on it. I'm going to say though, at least three go off the board before six, and maybe four. So at that point, you're getting the fourth or fifth best quarterback, and I can't see it. I can't see the Eagles taking. I just get the Trey Lance thing. I can't see it. We'll talk about him more, I'm assuming, leading up to the draft, but I can't see them using pick number six, such a high value asset on a total unknown.
They're all total unknowns, especially this year. This year, they don't know.
Trey Lance is especially unknown stats. This is a guy who played one game last year.
I mean, that's why I said it yesterday on the Niners Nation podcast network. Like, there's going to be chances for teams to get really good players because nobody knows anything about these guys. Like, Peter King had it in his Football Morning in America column this week. Like, they're having a hard time just finding what people weighed this year because there's no combine. You know, there's no in-person interviews. It's such a weird year. If you're bold and aggressive, I feel like you can get some really good players because guys are going to drop because the information is harder to get than it ever has been before.
193 completions is what I'm seeing here for Trey Lance. Like that's just so
at
so
North cute. Dakota State.
Yeah, and at a FCS level, right? So, gosh, I think they're going to ride with Hurts, and I hope that the Eagles don't spend money on a quarterback in free agency because I don't really see what that gets them. Like, if Marcus Mariota or Tyrod Taylor or even like Jacoby Brissett, if those guys are starting games for the Eagles this year, like if those guys like beat out Jalen Hurts in the quarterback battle, like what does that do for the Eagles? Like, I don't see where that gets them. It could make them better this year in theory, but like, where's that getting them in the long term? I think they really need to use this year to figure out exactly what Jalen Hurts is. Honestly, we might know what Jalen Hurts is in terms of like, he might just be a limited player and we can say that right now and it's going to end up being that way, but maybe let's try to put a supporting cast around him and maybe things will be different. Basically, it sucks when you're in this position, but the Eagles are here, and it's like, we're just going to have to hope for the best.
I feel you, man. We've all had those years as fans of teams, and like you said, hopefully they can at least get something out of it. All right, let's continue the SB Nation NFL free agent preview. We get the uglies today, O-line and D-line, and we caught up with Ross Tucker of Westwood One Sports, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Yada, yada, yada. We caught up with him yesterday before the Dak news just to help us take a look at some of the big uglies on the market this year. What's going on, Ross?
Fellas, how are you? Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. Anytime I get a chance to be on with both of you guys, you guys are like celebrities to me. I mean, stats, we go way back. Brandon, it's well documented what he has done with Bleeding Green. So this is cool.
See, he mentioned me first. I don't know if you noticed that, BLG.
He did.
That's because you reached out to me, Stats, and you're the one that introed me. I will not make that mistake again. Now that you're going to be obnoxious about it, now I won't even acknowledge when you ask me a question. I will only respond to Brandon.
Ross, you like said that. We go way back. Like, you know that's my thing.
I know. What do you guys got for me? Let's do this.
All right, well, we're looking at offensive linemen and defensive linemen in free agency. There's some big names out there. Let me just ask you generally, since I'm a Niners fan and Trent Williams is there, the talk is he's worth $20 million a year. Do you buy that?
You know, this gets tough for me because especially, you know, this year with the cap being down to – latest thing I heard from Peter King was $183 million. That just seems like a lot of tackle. And I know that's the going rate, and it's what Laremy Tunsil got from the Texans and Bill O'Brien, because Bill O'Brien doesn't know what he's doing. And he was able to get that, and then David Bakhtiari was able to beat that. And so I'm guessing someone will pay Trent Williams that amount of money. I guess I question whether or not that someone should be the San Francisco 49ers a little bit. And I say that for a couple of different reasons. Number one, you know, they have shown an ability to get by without someone like Trent. You know, the offense with the outside zone stuff and bootlegs and play action, it's not like you're asking the left tackle to just do 40 drop back one-on-one pass protection reps per game. And also, you know, he had some bad moments last year. I mean, he was a big reason why they lost that Eagles game. You know, BLG, you remember that? Derek Barnett was tearing them up. I mean, yep. They made a bunch of plays against Trent Williams in that game. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm remembering a game that they lost, like, in large part because of Trent Williams. And so, not that I sat here and watched every Trent Williams game, and he's a very good player, and I know he's got good grades from people, but you know, when it's a primetime game and I watched every snap, it's hard not to get that in my head. And I just feel like part of what you're paying for with Kyle Shanahan is the ability to be productive without having to pay a left tackle over $20 million a year, if that makes sense.
Are there any unknown guys in the trenches? And it seems like it's pretty easy for that to happen at that position, obviously more than a wide receiver, the skill players who get all the attention. Are there any underrated guys in the trenches this year that you think deserve some more love maybe than they're getting?
And you're talking guys that are free agents.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because once they get to this part, I do think a decent amount is known about most of these guys. You know, it's really kind of changed a lot, I feel like, Brandon, because of Pro Football Focus and all of the people like you guys and me on the Ross Tucker podcast, everything that we all do. I think it is harder to sort of be under the radar than it was for like a Jason Peters. But even Jason, I mean, I think people, after a couple years, knew that he was really good. I will say this, though. In general, in free agency, one thing I have noticed in recent years, you're almost better off not really starting till like your third or fourth year and then playing well that year, pretty well that year, but almost like leaving a little more to be like a little bit more like, wow, he's only played this year. He only played the last couple of years, but I think that he can be even better. Like every team thinks this guy is an ascending player. So this guy's not a free agent, but a guy like Wyatt Teller from the Browns would be a good example of that, right? Where if he were a free agent this year, people would be like, oh my gosh, he had a breakout year and he's only going to get better after that. That's not just an O-line, D-line thing. That's kind of an every position thing. Those are the only guys that could really be unknowns or under the radar would be guys that this is kind of like their first year really getting a chance to play and they perform pretty well.
So let's talk about that for a second, because the cap's going down this year. And I feel like if any position is going to get squeezed, it's going to be guys on the offensive line. Am I wrong about that?
Yes, you are. As is usually the case, you are, Stats. I mean, look, they all know, Stats, how important the O-line is now. Like, the word is out. However, I think this is interesting because I've been on a bunch of stations. You know, they talk to me in D.C. all the time about Brandon Scherff. And here's what's interesting. I do think that everybody realizes how valuable the offensive line is. But if you notice, like, the teams that have highly paid guards, none of them really seem to be that happy about it. Like, the Jags are trying to trade Andrew Norwell or get him to take a pay cut. The Giants are trying to trade Kevin Zeitler or get him to take a pay cut. The Chargers are getting rid of Trey Turner. Like, if you look, the teams that are like, we're going to get better on the O-line, we're going to pay a guard, you know, $13, $14, $15 million, none of them really seem happy about that. And I think part of that is because they realize it's just hard to do on a $180 million cap. And I think they realize they're going to be good players, serviceable players that are getting cut and that they can get, you know, like Gabe Jackson just got cut for the Raiders, right? And they saved $10 million on the cap. I mean, you're going to be able to get a guy like Gabe Jackson probably for, I don't know, $5 million, maybe a 1 year deal, $5 million, $6 million. It's just hard to justify paying guys more than double that or three times that, especially in this year and this cap environment. I mean, honestly, like, I think there's teams out there that are just going to wait around, sign a bunch of guys to 1 year deals for the minimum after they're cut, not minimum, but for lower price 1 year deals after they're cut. And then you can really field a nice team that way this year. And then let's say they have a great year and they get, then maybe you sign them to a bigger deal next year, or you let them go and you get a bunch of compensatory picks.
Flipping around to the defense, Ross, you're familiar with the Eagles, so therefore you must be familiar with Ryan Kerrigan from Washington, because that guy kills the Eagles when the Eagles play Washington. I feel like he has to be one of the most underrated free agents, maybe on the market in general. Just really good pass rusher. I think a team looking for a veteran guy, and I think just that market in general is good. Like, kind of like a team that needs a pass rusher can kind of get one on a 1 year deal, maybe, as opposed to necessarily needing to sink a ton of primary resources into that. Is that off base, or what do you think?
No, I agree. I'm a gigantic fan of Kerrigan. Always have been. Dude, he's been with a crap franchise for so long, and he just never misses games, always plays well, you know, finds a way to go out and be productive. And I know they've drafted guys like Chase Young and Montez Sweat now, and so Kerrigan is sort of disposable at this point. But I think there's going to be – I think you're right on it. Brandon, I think there's going to be some teams very happy to get Ryan Kerrigan, especially, you know, if you don't make him play 50 snaps and he's only playing 25 snaps a game, I think you're going to get 25 really good snaps out of him. He's kind of like he's like at the Chris Long Patriots slash Eagles stage of his career. You know, where he's going to go and he's still going to be a really good player. Now, maybe he's not full time, but he can be full time if you need him to be. But it'll be even better if you don't have him, you know, if you don't make him be full time.
Ross, we have a lot of Eagles fans who listen to this podcast. And so they know who you are.
And that's because of you, Brandon. They basically tolerate stats. They listen to the show for you, though. We know that.
I didn't have to say it, Ross. You said it for me. Thank you. I appreciate it. But they know who you are more than they know me, because you're on the Eagles preseason color analyst thing. So I know stats isn't really going to care about this, but I had to work it in somehow. So hopefully, you know, we have a preseason this year, maybe, unlike last year where that didn't happen and you didn't get to call any games. How much are you looking forward to that? I feel like you got to be looking forward to getting back in the press box, taking pictures of the food. I've seen you in there before doing that, getting the pictures of the pregame spread and everything.
Absolutely, man. It's like a dream gig for me. You know, if you grew up where I grew up in Reading, Pennsylvania, you're a diehard Eagles fan outside of Philly. I can remember being at the Jersey Shore and my parents would like want to go out to dinner. I'd be like, nope, third preseason game tonight. Got to watch it. Fourth preseason. Like, I wasn't going anywhere. I wanted to watch the preseason games. And so anything, it's kind of cool. You know, I never got a chance to play for the Eagles, unfortunately. But being back in the area and all my friends and family are diehard Eagles fans. So to have some affiliation with the team now and to do those games and pregame on the radio and stuff like that, it's really, really cool. Because it's funny, like, I do all these national things and I have all these podcasts and blah, 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 right? Things that I've been doing for a long time. Stats and I used to work together at NBC and blah, blah, blah. None of it in the minds of people from where I'm from and where I live now, none of it compares doing the Eagles preseason games on TV. It's like, they really, like, to them, that is, you know, cause it's something that they're all watching and it's on the NBC affiliate or Fox affiliate, depending on where they live. And it's like, hey, there's like, Two summers ago, the first year I did it, obviously last year there was no preseason games. Mm-hmm. People were like, people just went crazy. They just loved that it was somebody they knew doing the Eagles games.
Ross, we thank you so much for the time. Follow him on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. Like BLG said, you get the pregame shots of the press box food. Always appreciate that. Ross, thank you, sir.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime, fellas. Great to be on with you, Brandon, and the other guy. That was awesome.
Thanks, Ross.
Is that the name of the show? Brandon and the other guy?
That's not funny.
It should be.
See you guys.
Thanks again to Ross Tucker. We always appreciate him stopping by. I didn't appreciate his tone. Certain parts of that interview, I thought he was a little mean-spirited.
I thought he was completely fair and accurate, just personally. I think Ross is a great guy, knows what he's talking about. Glad to have him here on the preeminent show of the SB Nation NFL show, the preeminent podcast, whatever phrasing you want to use. Some new stats in the offensive defensive line world.
Lay it on me.
Well, the Giants are expected to franchise tag Leonard Williams, and they're still going to expected to, you know, work out a long-term deal. And I think that's a little interesting because the Giants actually lose their 2021 fourth round pick instead of their fifth if they re-sign him. So they kind of get a worse pick and have to give that to the Jets. I don't think that alone, obviously one spot or one round dropping on day three shouldn't like deter you from doing that deal. But I thought that was a little bit interesting.
There's no GM in the league I have less confidence in than Dave Gettleman. Like, nothing about him inspires confidence to me.
I feel like the Giants had a better year last year, or Gettleman had a better year last year than I would have expected from him. Not to say he's good all of a sudden, because I don't think that. But, you know, the Bradberry signing was a smart move by them. That was a really good pickup. Outside of that was, I don't know, was Blake Martinez anything? I guess they did some fine things. They still have to get quarterback right. But anyway, Leonard Williams, Joe Thuney, I think is not getting tagged stats by the, yes, the Patriots for the second year in a row. So he'll be on the market. Brandon Scherff did get tagged for the second year in a row. So that's how things are shaping up guard wise. Corey Lindsley stats is out there as PFF's top rated center, you know, at the Packers last year. And it doesn't sound like he's going to be back. I think the Chargers need a center. The Chiefs currently don't have a center under contract for this year, so it seems like one of the contenders could be getting a good player. And then can I hit you with three pass rushers that I think are kind of underrated on the market?
Lay it on me.
All right. So, I mean, what were you going to say there? No? And then, like, the podcast is
right,
over.
Yeah, that's it. Shut
no.
up.
All right. Well, that's the show. So three guys that I like, kind of underrated maybe a little bit on the pass rush market. Carl Lawson. Ninth, yes, in pass rush productivity last year. Only turns 26 in June. He's never been the best run defender, but he gives you edge rush juice. So I think that'll be a smart signing out there if a team can get him. Hassan Reddick, he's coming off a 12.5 sack season. As you recall, stats, five of those came in week 14 against the Giants. He only turns 27 in November. He was PFF's highest pass rush, or he had PFF's highest pass rush grade among edge rushers from week 10 through week 17. He's in the NFC West, so you know him. Do you believe in a Hassan Reddick?
Yeah, I think he can be a good player. I don't know if he's like 12 and a half sacks good every single year, but I think he can be definitely a valuable piece for sure. And the Cardinals kind of priced themselves out of it by bringing in JJ Watt.
Exactly. I know. I've seen articles on both Big Blue View and Blogging the Boys that, like, J.J. Watt to the Cardinals is good news for us because Reddick is available. And then the last one, and this is the one I'm proud of, stats, because a little deep cut here. This is like the, I feel like, you know, the Zach Lowe dropping these obscure players or whatever. And like, you know, I'm like, oh, this is how I really know what I'm talking about here. It's Ifadi Odenebo. Do you know that name, stats?
Yes. I know he exists.
Okay. He is a restricted free agent for the Minnesota Vikings. He was originally a seventh rounder. He turns 27 in April. He had only 3.5 sacks last year, but he drew the fifth highest double team rate in the league. Think about that.
Wow.
Fifth highest double team rate in the league. This guy, Odenebo. He had 7 sacks in 2019. And the Vikings are currently $3.5 million over the cap. Now, again, he's a restricted free agent, so I imagine they're just going to tender him. Yeah. They could do that at the second round level for $3.4 million. But if, let's say they do that, though. They only tender him at the second round level. If I'm a team who needs a pass rusher, I might trade for him. Only second round pick? Like, that might be a guy who could be undervalued.
especially if you're a team maybe that has a late second round pick.
Yes, you know, exactly.
Getting pass rushers is really difficult. It's the one, not the one, but it's one of the few positions teams are willing to pay a premium to acquire. It's a good point by you. That's a deep cut.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
Any other names? Are you, is that your list?
That's it. Those are just the three. I feel like, you know, it's only right that we did a little bit of the position preview here on the SB Nation NFL show as we're doing up leading up to free agency.
Oh, it's, I cannot wait. We are so close. Just watch the craziness that's going to take place. I think the rest of this week, the bloodletting that these teams are going to have to do to get under the cap, it's going to be a market like we've never seen before. So enjoy it. And we will be with you every step of the way. Again, before we go, I want to remind you, rate, review, subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show to get this show and all our great shows. BLG, I thank you. I think that you need to work on your tone with me. I think that you're way too mean. You got to take a page out of RJ's book, be a little nicer, and we'll work on it for next week.
It'll never happen. Listen to Seth.